Welcome to Investigating Angel, an Angel rewatch podcast where we analyze each episode of Angel the series with no spoilers. We are your hosts, Leia
and Sarah,
and if you love Angel, this is the podcast for you.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Investigating Angel. Today we are talking about Season 1, Episode 6, Sense and Sensitivity, and it takes everything within me not to say sense and sensibility, because Jane Austen, man, can't be beat. Love it. Have you read the book, Sense and Sensibility?
No.
You haven't? Did you see the movie?
No.
Oh man. One of these days, Leia, one day we will find something we both have seen.
One day. Maybe Selling Sense, that's like the only thing that I like remember in my like immediate brain.
Jeez, hopeless, man. This is hopeless. All right, well, I definitely recommend watching the movie at the very least, just because it has Emma Thompson in it, has Alan Ooh. Rickman, and it has Kate Winslet.
That's a great cast.
It is a phenomenal cast. I mean, Mr. Alan Rickman, Severus Snape, Hans Gruber, Sheriff of Nottingham. Yeah. Watch it at least for him.
Okay. Maybe next time we hang out, we'll watch it together.
All right. We're going to make a running list of things we need to watch.
Like literally everything, because I haven't seen basically anything.
What did you do, Leia, growing up? Just watch Angel and Buffy on repeat?
Basically.
Perfect. Like, so glad honestly, you're doing this podcast with me.
Harry Potter, Buffy and Angel. That's it. I didn't even like – I haven't even watched – I mean, you know this. I haven't even watched a lot of Disney movies because
– That is true.
By the time I came to Canada, like I didn't really grow up here and Disney wasn't really big. Where I grew up. So
yeah.
Which is weird because it's universal. Yeah.
Yeah, that is weird. But I guess like there's also kind of like an age when you watch certain things. Like I know my husband has not watched like Snow White or Little Mermaid. And so now he'll be like, oh yeah, I saw like bits and pieces of it when I walked through the room and the kids are watching it. And I was like, and then I'll be like, oh, like you should totally watch it. It's a classic. And then I'm like, well, I mean, you can watch it, but I don't know that you're going to appreciate it.
It's not
going to
be
it.
The same.
Yeah. There's a nostalgia factor there, or it's just the wonder of seeing it as a kid for the first time. So, all right, I'll make a list of all the things you definitely should watch. And then the next time we have a sleepover, I will just show you everything.
Amazing.
Buckle up.
You know what, though? I feel like if you watch Disney movies as like an adult, like it's probably like a lot darker.
Oh, yeah.
Than like as a child.
Some of them, especially like Snow White, is really terrifying. Like the Disneyland ride is really scary.
Just like the stories, I feel like are a little bit like crazy.
All right. But Sense and Sensitivity, directed by James A. Contner, written by Tim Minear, the man, aired November 9th, 1999. Yes. All right. We've been hyping this man up, and I'm so excited to talk about him. We can't fully talk about him yet because I feel like this episode is kind of just like a little bit of a taste of what he can write. I think his truly great first episode, Somnambulist, however you say that.
Somnambulist, yeah.
Okay.
I think Somnambulist. We'll have to look it up when we get there.
When we get there, we'll figure it out. That is truly like his first like really, really great episode. Not that this one isn't, but we'll get there.
I think I read that he actually wrote the script for that one before this one.
He did.
This was his second. Yeah.
This episode actually was an accident. He was not supposed to write this one. Oh. I'm pretty sure. They never say specifically which episode it is, but this is the only one that comes before that. So I'm pretty sure it's this one. But okay, skipping ahead. All right. So Tim Minear says his original idea of this episode was of cops who become so sensitive that they were unable to perform their jobs. But after discussing the idea with Joss Whedon, it became something far more interesting than what I had originally pitched. Instead of just super sensitive cops, you have people whose emotions are completely on the surface. So in the book Slayers and Vampires, they say, in the first year, the writing staff included from Buffy, Jane Espenson, Douglas Petrie, David Fury, and Marty Noxon, in addition to Whedon and Greenwalt. So new to Mutant Enemy was producer Tracy Stern, staff writer Janine Renshaw, and consulting producer Howard Gordon. And they went on to hire a bunch of new writers for Angel once they realized, hey, it's not cutting it to have the Buffy writers writing for both. And one of those new hires, and as the book says, in hindsight, the greatest strength Whedon and Greenwalt could have found was writer Tim Minear, who in many ways came to define the voice of Angel. So Tim, a little backstory on him, was working on the X-Files, was very unhappy with it working there. And someone was like, hey, you should be working for Joss Whedon. And she actually showed him the Buffy episode Surprise. And so once he left X-Files, he pitched a few ideas to Joss to actually be a writer for Buffy. And one of the ideas that he had was Xander loses his virginity because druids are coming to Sunnydale and they're looking for a virgin sacrifice. Literally, if he doesn't lose his virginity, it's a matter of life and death. And Tim Minear says, that seemed like what it feels like when you're a boy in high school. And so it seemed to me that it was taking a metaphor of what he was doing with horror and making it about the stages of growing up. Tim recalls that Joss loved his ideas so much, but he said he was the angriest man he'd ever met and didn't think he could be in the same room as him.
Like, Tim was the angriest man he'd ever met.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, we're hearing this from Joss? Like, what? It's a little funny looking back.
That's
now.
So funny.
Yep. Apparently, he really was. So David Greenwalt said of Tim, he is one of the best writers I've ever worked with. Also a very funny, sarcastic guy. To be insulted by him is a pleasure, you know? As a matter of fact, the first year of Angel, he was sitting around the table with all of the writers and he wasn't very friendly. They were saying, why aren't you more friendly? Why won't you hang out with us? And he said, well, none of you will be here next year. Why would I do that?
Burn.
Yeah, so that just kind of gives you a little insight into who this guy was.
He's a spicy man.
Yeah, apparently he's just, yeah, got a lot of stuff going on. So because of all that, they end up going their separate ways. Tim went on to work with Howard Gordon on Strange World, and he also said he went on vacation as well, which sounds like poor burnout perfect. Man needed a vacation.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. Later, when David Greenwalt was looking to hire writers for Angel, he contacted Tim, and Tim actually turned him down 5 times. They don't say why, but apparently Tim was still angry. I don't know. So Tim says this. He said, Howard Gordon actually said to me, your problem is that you're usually the smartest person in the room. You need to be in a place where you're not. You need to be with Joss because he's smarter than you, and you can actually learn something.
Oh, my God. This just sounds like so much, so messy.
It is so messy. It is. It's just a bunch of men, like, acting so dramatic.
Messy. Oh, my God.
Because anger is not an emotion, Leia.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I forgot.
Yeah, no. It's only an emotion for women, not men.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So It sounds like Tim really struggled with the direction that they were taking, like X-Files and stuff, because I think he kind of had a vision how he wanted to do things and it wasn't working. And so, yeah. Anyway, he says yes. And then he says, by that time, I'd started becoming more familiar with Buffy. Angel had already turned evil. I think all of that stuff was around the time that television critics were writing about the most subversive television is being made on the kids' network, the WB. It talked about Buffy and how people thought this was some campy horror thing. They thought of Scooby-Doo, literally. They were completely missing the subversive nature of this, as Joss was saying, in that format. It wasn't camp. In fact, it was drama. It was, in fact, great drama. So Tim was becoming more of a fan. And then he joined the Angel cast, and he talks about how the first script he wrote was Somnambulist, whatever, which is episode 11. But due to the fact that he was a new writer, his scripts were not priority scripts. So, and this went for all the writers. So they ended up putting them kind of like on the back burner, and they said they put them in like the I forget what the term was, but they put them like back in like, hey, these are scripts we're going to pull out if like we're needing more stuff.
Purgatory.
Yeah, like script pretty much.
Purgatory.
Yeah. It was like, we're going to like focus on the scripts that Marty Noxon, Douglas Petrie, those people have written. And according to him, the turning point of his career on the show was when a script came in that didn't work and he was asked to rewrite it. And it's not said, but I think that that's this episode, this script. And then after that point, he was given more and more responsibility on the show. And it's just really interesting that the first half of season one is what we deem as the weaker half of the season. Yeah. Obviously, there's some great episodes in there. But the fact that it was written by Buffy writers and not those who are hired, like the Angel writers, I think it just goes to show that you can have writers who do brilliant work on one show but don't do great on another simply because they don't understand the tone and they're not meant to write that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. What do you think about this episode, Leia? What are your thoughts?
I think it's really fun. I like thoroughly enjoyed watching it. I thought they did a really good job with Kate's character. Just some like incredibly funny moments that were like literally made me laugh out loud. So I really enjoyed it for that. I thought it was really funny. I thought it did a good job of giving us more insight into Kate's kind of backstory, more about why she is the way she is, more about Wolfram and Hart and who they kind of are, and that they're kind of powerful in town. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So from a lot of the reviews that I was reading and just looking up and kind of seeing what most people think of the episode, it either goes one of two ways. People were like, this is my candy episode. I recognize it's not the best episode ever, but it's just the one I like to watch because it's just simply fun. Mm-hmm. Or parts of it are fun. And then there's other people that are like, it's not a great episode. It's not well done. It's a bit jarring in its transition from comedy to drama and back and forth. And I don't know. I feel like when I watched it, I feel like it was kind of a nice reprieve from the very heavy episodes we've had so far this season. I think we were due for a lighter one. I feel like it's often the lighter episodes that really allow us to bond with the characters. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what they had in mind for Kate. And we needed to see the characters bonding together. And I think that in some ways it accomplished that. And so I personally enjoyed it. I'm trying to be better. And I told you this before we started recording. I'm trying to be better about appreciating an episode for what it is, not what I Right. want it to be.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, like, I really love the deeper, the darker stuff, the stuff that has like lots of metaphor and layers. But every once in a while, it's okay to just sit back and be like, I can appreciate this episode for just being simply fun. You know?
100%. I think with this episode too, it's just I was never like bored. Like I was watching it and I was never bored. It was just entertaining Agreed. All the way through. I thought it was like hilarious, the whole like sensitivity training. Like if any of our listeners work in a corporate setting, like you know how real that is and how mind-numbing it is. Like it's just so funny because I've attended a bunch of sensitivity training because of like the line of work that I do. And it's just like just watching everything collapse because of it. Like, I don't know. It was just really funny. I was never bored, like I said. And I don't know. I thought it was enjoyable. Is it like a important episode? No. Have any of them really been important up until this point? I don't really think. Other than
In the Dark.
In the Dark and important. The pilot, I don't think any of them have really been that important. I think Room with a View was like supposed to be, but it wasn't if you listen to our last episode.
Listen at your own peril.
But yeah, I mean, it was definitely a lot more engaging and fun to watch than like I Fall to Pieces or – What Lonely was the Heart. One before? The connection one, Lonely Heart. Lonely Heart,
yeah.
The one with the sex demon or whatever.
That's going to be – we're going to be referencing that episode until the end of time, unfortunately. Oh, boy.
Connections.
Oh, gosh. What was the one that we were on Becoming Buffy? We constantly were referencing – oh, it was –
Teacher's Pet.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That episode, for some reason, it just kept popping ridiculous. Up. It's so ridiculous. Bad. Oh, I know. Yeah. Anyway, this is going to be our new teacher's pet. What in the world?
Yeah. Lonely heart.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Sorry. There was someone who commented on our Instagram, was like, I regret not making this a drinking game for every time you guys said connection. And then your response was you would be making a connection with the floor if that was the case.
Like you'd get blackout drunk. Like, there's no other way out of it.
Yeah. If you have not listened to that episode, man, that was a fun one to record because it was just not a fun one to watch.
Yeah. That was a very interesting episode.
Yeah, it was. But okay, back to this one. I agree with you. I do think this episode did not fully accomplish what it set out to do. I think that there were a little bit of missteps. There were a few missteps. We'll talk about it when we get there. But Patch the Nerd, surprisingly to me, was not a huge fan of this episode. He says, I'm not entirely sure what the episode is supposed to say. It's all very heavy-handed, but in a way that feels internally contradictory. It is supposed to be about Angel's character. Cordy opens the episode by saying Angel uses his inner torment to keep people at bay, and then that's true. But then the talking stick pushes everyone into ecstasy, huggy drunk town, and the episode then seems to be telling us that too much sensitivity can be a bad thing. Kate humiliates herself, Angel won't vamp out, and the cops nearly set all the criminals loose on Gotham. So then is the episode going the other route and saying that a hard world requires hard people to keep it safe? If so, then the episode inadvertently validates Kate's father's douchebaggery.
I feel like this episode was most definitely not about Angel and his insensitivity. I think this episode was a lot more about Kate. This was, this is in my mind, a Kate-centric episode. And more 100%. So like building what is going to be drawing Kate and Angel together. I don't really see it as like a commentary on insensitivity or whatever. Like, I know the scene with Kate was supposed to be kind of humiliating because that's what her dad says at the very end. Mm-hmm. But it was a scene. I think it all of it together was just supposed to help us see like deeper into Kate's character. So I don't really agree about it being more about Angel at all.
Yeah. I think he's, again, when we talked about this before, I think Ian, Passion of the Nerd, is coming from his views of – or his reviews of Buffy, where pretty much every episode is about Buffy to some extent. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Angel works the same way, which is hilarious because in his first evaluation or his first analysis of Angel, he even says each of the characters stand alone and don't necessarily reflect Angel. And that's one of the biggest differences between Buffy and Angel. But I also think the theme of this episode, I think, is pretty clear. I think the theme is that there needs to be balance. I think that sensitivity, like all things, is healthy in moderation. And isn't that what the best Buffy and Angel episodes do? They give you a little bit of both and they invite discourse on both sides and they don't always fall on one side or the other. It's kind of up for interpretation on for the audience, you know? So I don't know. I think there is some unevenness and I think it does contradict itself at times, but I kind of understand where the episode was trying to go. And I feel like most people, if you just use common sense, like obviously there is a time and a place for strong emotion and all that stuff. So come on, Tim. Just kidding. also, too, and this is – I'm not trying to, like, bash on Passion of the Nerd because you all know I'm, like, a huge fangirl. But I was a little surprised that he didn't understand the theme simply because I feel like a major clue is in the title. So Sense and Sensitivity obviously comes from Jane Austen's book Sense and Sensibility. Sense and Sensibility – for those of you who don't know, haven't seen it, read it, whatever, it's a story about two sisters, Eleanor and Marian Dashwood. Eleanor represents qualities of sense, reason, restraint, and responsibility, while Marian, her younger sister, represents qualities of sensibility, emotion, spontaneity, and impulsiveness. Austen wrote the novel around the turn of the 18th century on the cusp between two cultural movements, classicism and romanticism, and each sister is supposed to represent one. And then I'm getting all this from Spark Notes. So in case you're thinking I remembered all this, no, I did not. So it's been a while. All right. But Spark Notes says this: Eleanor, though representing sense, does not lack passion. And Marian, though representing sensibility, is not always foolish and headstrong. Austen's antitheses do not represent epigrammatic conclusions, but a starting point for dialogue. In this novel, she seems to argue not for the dismissal of sensibility, but for the creation of a balance between reason and passion. Fanny Dashwood's violent outbreak of feeling towards the end of the novel reveals that too little feeling is as dangerous as too much. Both Eleanor and Marion achieve happiness at the end of the novel, but they do so only by learning from one another. Together, they discover how to feel and express their sentiments fully while also retaining their dignity and self-control. And I think we can see echoes of that in this episode, maybe not done as well as it could have been, maybe a little clunky, but I think the episode is trying to give an argument for both sides and saying, hey, there is a time and a place for expressing those emotions. That is a good and healthy thing, because if you don't, like, you bottle it all up. But then also,
it explodes.
What happens if you just let it all out and there's nothing to temper that, there's no sensibleness left? Then that becomes really problematic, because then nothing ever gets achieved, you know? So I think that the episode was really trying to, like, show that both are important.
I agree.
Thanks. I was actually, like, when I looked it up, because it's been a while, I was like, oh, this actually fits very nicely with the episode.
Yeah.
All right. So jumping into the episode, we jump right in. There's this guy, like, trying to run away. We see the gym bag hit. The music gets popping. We see a figure suddenly appear in the alley. This felt very Buffy-esque.
That's what I thought. I was like, Buffy? Is that you?
Yeah. Yes, even like the hair pulled back, the silhouette and everything. And especially too, because during career day, Buffy got assigned police officer. So I'm like, okay, I see what's going on here.
I think somebody commented on one of our posts being like, and she said it was Grace, I believe. And she said that initially she thought that they were trying to make Kate kind of a mirror of like an older Buffy type of character. And this particular scene, I was like, oh my God, like, yeah, I see it. Like, this is like very Buffy-like, but older Buffy.
Even the way
Buffy.
That she jumps up and kicks
and the punning.
The guy.
And she was like punning while she was arresting the guy and like being very sassy like Buffy usually is, and like just like badass and stuff. So I was like, yeah, like, I see it. Yeah.
At the very least, regardless of whether they're trying to intentionally make her mirror Buffy, they're trying to draw parallels. And I think it's supposed to help you draw a connection to her.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like, no, don't get up, really. And it is interesting, because I was like, as cool as Kate looks, I feel like this is definitely crossing a line. Like, he's not attacking her. He's not necessarily trying to get away after she initially pushes him down. Also, where's her partner? Where's the accountability? So I don't know. This episode could deviate a lot into conversations about police violence and, the whole ethics and stuff with that. And so I thought, in a lot of ways, this episode was kind of ahead of its time in pushing the boundaries with some of these moments like this. Because, you know, Kate is overstepping, and the episode subtly hints at that. So then we cut to inside the police precinct. She's interrogating this guy, and apparently she's been there for a really, really long time. And okay, so one of my gripes about this episode, and one of the reasons I think that it doesn't work as well as it could have, is we don't know. We never figure out what little Tony does. We don't know why Kate is after him. I think because he's an Italian stereotype, we can kind of figure it out and read between the lines. Yeah. But in the big scheme of things, he's just a plot device. And I think that it would help us understand Kate's motivations a little bit better if we knew why she was going after Tony and why it was so important to her. Because without knowing, all we're left to infer is either she's a workaholic or she's trying to earn the approval of her father. But if, like, say, for instance, he did something completely horrific and she's terrified of what will happen if she doesn't catch him, that would kind of give us a little bit of insight and help us relate with her a little bit. I don't know. I feel like motivation matters, and it was a missed opportunity.
I was just thinking about the interrogation scene and how she, you know, put hands on the – she, like, grabbed the guy and, like, put him up against the wall, and they had to, like, remove her. And it goes back to a point that you said, where it's like, Kate isn't like a cop that's like on the straight and narrow. Like, she's willing to go outside of her like job description to get the job done. And that's not necessarily always going to be a good thing, because it's almost like she doesn't have boundaries. And maybe, we don't know enough about her motivations to be like, you know, she's doing things for the right reasons, or, you know, and then it kind of goes into like later in the episode too, when she asks for Angel's help, where she wants him to like hide it. So it's like you kind of start to question, like, Kate is like kind of a loose cannon a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I feel like here's the thing is Kate's not a character we know very much about. And Passion Leonard actually talks about this, and I'll quote him later, but we don't know her very well. So they're trying to help us relate with her. And so I feel like giving her a motivation apart from she's just repressed would have helped us understand her a little bit better. Yeah. And I think it maybe would have made the bar scene later on a little bit more impactful, not so jarring. But I don't know. So it's not a huge thing, but I just was kind of like, as I was going through, I was like, what did Tony do? And I kept waiting for an answer to pop up, and we never know. So like you said, she lays hands on the guy. Everyone has to come in, take her out. And then like through a series of like conversations and stuff, we find out that she's literally been there like all night. And she's kind of at her wit's end. She cannot find this guy, little Tony. And then she thinks, oh man, I do know someone that could possibly find him. And she decides to go to Angel. So cut to Angel. I gotta say, Angel looked really good in this scene. He had his like rolled up his shirt. I don't know what it was, but like
he was just like working. Like he was just like doing his thing. Yeah.
I think I'm so used to seeing him always wearing his coat when he's out working. And so to see him just kind of wearing like what was like a long sleeve with like cargo pants.
His style on Buffy was a lot more, I would say, like vampire gothic almost. Sure. Like he was wearing like a lot of velvets and like long leather jackets and long like wool coats and stuff. But I feel like ever since he's come to LA, he's a lot more like laid back. Like he wears like, you know, just some black pants and like a nice like knit sweater. And it's very much like, I don't know, it's a different style for Angel. More modern. And maybe that has to do with the fact that like on Buffy, it was all wrapped up in like that gothic romance and stuff and whatever. And on this show, he's more of like, oh, he's like the superhero. But yeah, he looks really good.
So he's like attacking these like snake tentacled monster thingies, and Coyle comes in. Cordelia and Doyle. I made a ship is name
that
for
what,
them.
Is that what their ship name's going to be?
I don't know. Coyle?
I like it, that.
It's better than Doherty.
Coyle, Doherty.
I mean, neither one is great, but Coyle is
what
better
than... What does the fandom call them?
I don't know. I think we'll just call them Coyle, okay?
Coyle
enters the scene. They're not even actually a couple yet, and we're already like putting a label on them. They run in, and Angel's like, oh my gosh, guys, like, what took you so long? And Doyle's like, not a lot of enchanted swordsmiths open on Sunday. Angel finishes off the Wriggly worm snakes or whatever, and he's like, all right, cut off all the limbs. Make sure you do it right this time, essentially. Like, this is the second time he's had to do this. He's like, I don't want to come back to life. And then he just leaves. He's like, I'm going to go clean out the nest. See you back at the office. And Cordelia is like, wow, how rude. No, please. No, thank you. While Doyle's back there getting strangled to death by one of these snake things. And she's like, gosh, he's just so insensitive, so unaware. And like, okay, Cordelia. But here's the thing, and I know we had a long, extensive text message when you were watching the episode earlier today. Angel's technically their boss, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like telling them what to do.
That's the thing. Like, I don't really understand where Cordelia is getting this, because it's like, first of all, she's one of the most insensitive people on the show. Like, has been. And, like, that's just her character. No, this is not to, like, bash her or anything. This is Cordelia.
That's how,
like,
she's
everybody knows
to be
this.
Yeah.
And it's like, Cordelia is only nice to you if you are doing something for her.
Right. Yeah.
But it's like, Cordelia, like, she's the one that wanted to form Angel Investigations because she needed a job and a purpose. And Angel is your boss. Like, I feel like at this point, they haven't reached that stage where it feels like they're friends. Like, they're very much co-workers, because Angel's still very, like, obviously that we'll see more of that later. But I feel like at this point, like, what episode is this? 5?
Yeah, this is six.
Okay, episode six. I feel like we haven't really gotten to the point where I would look at these people. Like, I would maybe say Angel and Doyle are friends, but I wouldn't really say that Cordelia and Angel and Doyle are all, like, friends. Like, they're more very much, like, co-workers at this point. Angel is their boss. And it's like, girl, you chose this life. Right. You are the one that wanted this, like, business and stuff. And, like, he's acting like your boss. Like, he's telling you, you know, this is what you need to do. And I'll meet you back at the office. And was she, like, expecting a thank you? Like, I just don't really know what Cordelia wants. But I feel like,
I don't think anybody does.
We talked about how, like, it's funny that the episode kind of calls her out on it, because it's like, it's just that visual of, like, Doyle getting strangled in the background. She's going off on her tangent, and then she goes, like, I mean, could you be more clueless? And it's like, girl, like, look behind you, like, help him.
Yep.
And if that is not, like, that doesn't, like, encompass Cordelia as a whole, like, I don't know what does. Like, that is the visual representation of how clueless Cordelia is, and, like, how misplaced this whole, like, demanding that he become more sensitive, I think.
Yes, I agree. Well, I don't know. I feel like this is just kind of out of nowhere, especially because, like, he helped her get an apartment the episode before. He was literally fighting with her to have her fight back. Not fighting, like, fighting for her, rallying her to stand up for herself. Like, they went and cast out the ghost in her house during their own free time, of their own volition. Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like she doesn't really have a leg to stand on. And on top of that, she's been the one wanting him to charge for clients, and he doesn't want to. Which one is more sensitive?
You know, honestly, what I mean? Like,
it's just very strange. But, you know, it's Cordelia. So, I mean, maybe we're asking too much.
I feel like, yeah, I feel like Cordelia just, like, expects people to be sensitive toward her, but she can't offer that same, like, consideration back a lot of the time. So it's like,
Yeah, right. Yep. I mean, as Doyle said, consider the source, right?
Yeah. And it's great that, like, the episode is, like, calling her out. Like, it's almost, like, funny. Like, really, Cordelia, like, you're the one that's saying this right now. Like,
right. Well, okay. And it's not like Angel is like, oh, okay, guys, I'm going to go take, like, a hot, steamy bath by myself while you finish this. Like, he's going to go clean up the nest.
Like you guys are working.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't feel like he's insensitive, but that maybe we just have, like, major, like, blinders on for Angel, but I don't think so, man.
I mean, like you said, with this episode is about, like, time and place. Like, this was most certainly not the time for Angel to, like, go down on his knees and, like, you know, worship Cordelia because she showed up late to, like, dismember this demon. Like, I don't really understand.
Well, the sad thing is it took two of them to go get a sword while Angel had to sit there and fight by himself.
Yeah.
You know, like, maybe she could have stayed and helped, or she could have just gone and gotten this, I don't know, whatever. Anyway,
you end guys of the day, it. this is your job. So just, like, do what your job is.
You asked to be here, dude.
You are the only reason that this is a thing. Like, Angel can do this on his own. Yep. He's doing you a favor by, like, simply, like, having Angel investigations.
All right. So they get back. Cordelia's complaining about all the grime on her outfit, which I'm like, girl, just keep a spare change of clothes at the office. Like, at this point, I feel like that's a must if you're going to be out there fighting, you know, demons.
She's so funny. She, like, sits down on the chair, grabs the magazine, and she's, like, ranting and, like, turning the pages really aggressively.
It was pretty funny.
And I'm like, this is, like, yes.
Yeah. Charisma Carpenter nailed that part. It just
– oh, that was so good.
It was very good. Well, and then Angel, like, starts to tell her, like, something she needs to do, and she's like, nope, unless an asteroid's heading towards Earth, unspeakable evil is rising in the San Fernando Valley, which I was born in the San Fernando Valley, so it gave me a little bit of, like, oh, my home.
Aww.
When I heard that. And Angel's like, you need to call your mother back. She phones saying she'd like to speak with you. And I will say, like, the script and even in the episode says she reacts to the call from her mother, quickly recovers. And I'm like, no, no, dive into it. I want to know what her relationship with her parents are. Like, we've heard nothing. We knew nothing when it came to on Buffy. I think there was one scene that showed Cordelia's bedroom and that was it. Like, I just, there's so much of Cordelia's backstory we literally just don't know.
Agreed.
So Cordelia's like, you left us. Show a little interest in the feelings of others. Doyle is like, she thinks you're insensitive. Basically, Doyle's like having to translate for him. And he's like, and not to bring up the irony, but consider the source. I was like, you know what? I feel like Doyle is so good for Cordelia. I feel like if they ever get into a relationship, he's going to be so good for her because he has absolutely no problem calling her out on her crap. But he's also so kind with her too.
Yeah.
And Angel's like, I'm not insensitive. I'm reserved. Doesn't mean I don't care. And I was like, thank you for every introvert everywhere. Honestly, it's not that we're mean. We just have very little energy to expend, you know?
Exactly.
Anyway, so Cordelia keeps going on and on. And then Kate shows up. Mm-hmm. And this is just like full of tension. I don't know if it's sexual tension. I don't know what it is, but there's like something going on here. And everyone else can definitely tell. Also, okay, since when did Angel start drinking coffee? It feels like every episode he's drinking coffee.
Since he has to work with Cordelia every day, probably. He's like, shit, I have to teach her how to type and like do things from scratch. Like, I need coffee for this.
This is why he's reserved, because he has to expel so much energy just listening to Cordelia. He doesn't have much left to do anything else. All right. So Kate's like, hey, I'm trying to find this little Tony guy. She gives him information, says, I want you to find him. But the moment you find him, don't intervene. Call me. And he was like, oh, you know, you don't want me to get involved because it would reflect badly on the department. And she says, no, I don't want you to get involved because I don't want you to get hurt, which is really funny because we're like, I know something you don't.
Yeah.
So Angel's like, you guys find anything? Not really. Cordelia's giving the silent treatment and Doyle's like subtly trying to be like, hey, like smooth it over, say something. And Angel's like, Cordelia, I wanted to, you know, thank you so much for going through those coroner's reports, because I can imagine how not fun it is to read about, you know, coroner stuff. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. What a toxic work environment if your boss has to thank you for doing your job.
Honestly. She's literally doing her job.
I literally wrote in my notes, okay, but doesn't he pay her?
I need to start demanding that my manager, my boss, send me an email thanking me every time I do my job.
I feel like that's only reasonable, right?
It's the only reasonable thing to do.
And have her send you a compliment every day on your shoes. Like, come on, man.
Yes.
Insensitive. But okay, this is why you don't work for family and friends, right? This is why you don't work or go into business with them. It just makes things complicated.
But and the thing is, they're not friends yet. Like, just don't.
Yeah, but then it's like, okay, would Cordelia feel this entitled? Okay, I think I already know the answer. But would Cordelia feel this entitled with anybody else?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. I said halfway through it. Yes. I'm like, yeah, she would.
Yes. If anything, it would be more like they're acquaintances. They know each other from Sunnydale. And Cordelia has latched onto Angel and Doyle because she doesn't really have anyone else. And she's like down in the dumps too. But it's like at this point, like, again, I don't know how other people see this, but I, at least for me at this point, again, I wouldn't really consider them friends. I would say they're more like they're getting there, definitely. But I would say they're more like coworkers that work together.
Yeah. And yeah, Angel's, I think they definitely boss. Care for each other. Yeah, but I don't think they're a friendship level.
I think from their like line of work also, like this is not a regular job. Like, you know, they're going out and like fighting evil things. So obviously there's going to be more care. But I just feel like they haven't really, like how much time has passed since they first started, whatever, you know, like a few months maybe. I don't know. Yeah. It just feels like it's a little bit early to be like, oh my God, we're the bestest of friends and we like are so close. And like, but is that really like your close friends? Like, no, I don't think so.
So then they kind of figure out that there's a common place where they're dumping these bodies and where the victims wash up. So they pull up the tidal flow charts and kind of figure out there is some place that little Tony feels safe. Then we have Kate back at the precinct, and we're introduced to Kate's dad. And let me tell you, like, I know one of the bigger gripes from a lot of the people who reviewed this episode, they were like, oh, it feels like Kate's very much a stranger to us. And this episode was weird how, like, especially like the bar scene where she goes in, starts crying, and it's so emotional and it felt awkward because we don't know her very well, which I kind of get to a certain extent. But I feel like this episode accomplished what it set out to do at least a little bit, because you definitely know more about Kate by the end of it. Mm-hmm. And I love that they bring in her dad. So good.
I agree. And I think that scene, I mean, we'll talk about it when we get there more, but I think it's supposed to be awkward and cringy.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to be like, oh my God, what is happening?
This whole interaction between Trevor, her dad, and Kate is really uncomfortable. You can tell that there's just a lot unsaid and unspoken between the two of them. We find out that Trevor is retiring, that they're going to throw him a send-off at this bar, and Kate is like, hey, I was asked to say some things, you know, because, you know, you're my dad. And he's like, oh, don't go any trouble. Like, he's minimizing it. And she's like, no, it's no trouble. Like, she's trying to make a connection. Like, she wants to do this for him. So, question for you. So, Passion of the Nerd and some of the reviewers said that they felt like both characters were trying to find a way to connect with one another. But from what I got in the scene, I never really got the sense that Trevor really cared to connect. I thought that Kate was trying to, but he's the one that just keeps shutting her down. Like, it feels like she keeps throwing him bones.
Yeah.
And he's the one that's just like, I don't care to get any closer.
First of all, I didn't know his name was Trevor, so this is news to me. I'm just like, who the hell is Trevor?
Sorry. He does not look like a Trevor, does he?
No.
Yeah, he looks like a Bill or something. Some old white man.
Yeah, he definitely looks like a Bill.
Trevor sounds like a six-year-old boy.
I definitely like thought like his name was Bill or something. Like,
I don't think people his age are named Trevor. That's very much a 90s white boy name. But anyway, okay, yeah, Trevor is his name. Yeah, moving past that, we'll just call him Mr. Lockley from now on.
Yeah, please. But yeah, I tend to agree. It does feel like the episode is trying to tell you, and especially in like their interactions, is that Kate's dad, Mr. Lockley, not Trevor, Kate's dad, is very much closed off and they don't really like bond, like they don't really have a close relationship, but Kate wants to kind of connect with her dad. I don't feel that they're both trying to connect with each other like at all.
I agree with that totally. So Angel calls, says, hey, we found the guy, and she's like, all right, I'm on my way, get out of there, don't engage, essentially. Angel watches for a minute, sees that a boat is coming, realizes that they're missing their window of opportunity to catch little Tony, that by the time Kate gets there, he's going to be long gone on that boat. So he decides to intervene.
Hops in the back, puts on the Hawaiian shirt and a hat this time.
And a hat. Where'd he get this hat? He didn't have that last time. It's almost like he's like at this store and he's like, oh, this will be great for my disguise. And then just keeps adding more stuff to it. Like, this is what normal humans wear, right?
Hawaiian shirts. He's so pale too.
Let me just say, what is his name that he gives them?
Herb it's Saunders, like, from Baltimore.
Doesn't that sound more of like what Kate's dad would be named?
Yes. Oh my God.
I kind of wish Angel had come up and been like, my name's Trevor.
Can you play that scene where he's introducing himself? It's so funny.
Hi. It's exciting, isn't it? I just love boat trips.
Who's the mook?
Herb Saunders, Baltimore.
It's Herb Saunders.
Gripes, the freeways you people have in this town. I've been driving around circles all day, but the brochure did say boats leaving every 2 hours.
I think you're still lost.
That's not the boat to Catalina?
Amazing.
He's so funny. My gosh.
Herb Saunders.
I love that in the script, it's like, remembers what Kate instructed, a beat. Then Angel reaches into the back of his car and extracts a seriously, in all caps, loud Hawaiian shirt and a crumpled hat. So he just leaves it back there. Oh, my word.
Honestly, LA changed Angel. It really changed him. Like,
yeah, he's loosened up a bit. I love that they're having this running gag of Angel, whenever he needs to go undercover, just wears a very loud Hawaiian shirt. It's so good.
Where did he even get it? Like,
I don't know. It's like a costume store or something. Yeah. I don't know. It looks like, okay, it looks like something like an older man would probably wear. Like, he went and, like, he doesn't know or what like to Xander. Shop for his age group. Or Xander.
Or Xander.
Giles would not be caught dead in this thing.
No.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so I feel like watching this scene and kind of like who he becomes later on in the episode, I feel like that is David Boreanaz's true personality right there.
100%. 100%.
And he looks like he is just loving it.
He's all about like the Italian making a deal in the dark and like
and his Baltimore accent is not that great, not much better than his Irish one, but it's okay. We still love him for it. The charm is there. My favorite part is, though, like, he comes up, he's like, Herb Saunders, Baltimore. And the henchman's like, hey, it's Herb Saunders. Like, hey, I know this guy. Like, what? Like, he's in on it,
it's
too.
It's Herb.
Yeah, like, hey, we all know him.
He's like, I don't like this guy. I don't like this Herb Saunders.
I like how he doesn't talk to him. He just talks past him, like, to the henchman. Yeah. He's like, get rid of him. Anyway, all right. So Angel decides to punch him out. Kate drives up and catches little Tony. And then we cut to Kate locking him in the car. And she looks pissed. Comes up to Angel and is like, what part of just get out of there gave you the trouble? Which, okay, I don't understand why Angel couldn't have just pretended to be a random civilian that was walking by and got caught in the car. Like, make up a story. Like, Kate could have just pretend like she didn't know him. I feel like they kind of made it a bigger deal than what it needed to be. But, you know, for the story, I get it. So little Tony very, like, obviously sees Angel. And you can kind of see him making, like, a mental note in his head. And you're like, okay, this is going to be important. And so in the precinct, we have little Tony being like, I want my phone call. And I really love this interaction between little Tony and Kate, because he's like, been running after me a long time, haven't you, sweetheart? If I'd known how bad you wanted me, I might have let you catch me a little sooner. And I was kind of like, oh, that's so disgusting. That's like nasty and all this stuff. Kate doesn't even blink, says, and if I'd known how much you need the exercise, I might have let you run a little bit longer. Ooh. And I was like, that is amazing. That's so good.
That's a burn if I ever saw one.
Honestly, I feel like Elizabeth Rom had the juiciest role in this episode. I feel like they gave her so much material to work with. Not only is she like tough Kate, we've got hot-headed Kate, we've got incredibly emotional, vulnerable Kate, and then we've got like goofy Kate. I mean, she just got to do four different variations of
the character. She did a really good job.
She nailed it. And honestly, I don't know how you can walk away saying you don't know a little bit more about the character, because we got to see so many different sides of her.
And that's why I say, like, wholeheartedly that this is a Kate-centered episode. This is not an Angel-centered episode whatsoever. This is all about Kate.
So then we cut over to Wolfram and Hart, which finally we saw glimpses of them in City Of, and then we've, like, heard little bits and pieces of them since then. But I've just been waiting for them to be a bigger player in the game, and this made the episode, like, at the very least, come on, it brought in Wolfram and Hart, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So pan over to Evil Lee Mercer.
That's not Sheldon.
He looks like Sheldon from Big Bang Theory, doesn't he?
I'm like, that's not Chris. What's his name? Parsons? What's his first name?
I don't remember his
Jim
name.
Parsons.
Is that Jim Parsons? I don't know.
Yeah, that's definitely not him.
It looks like him, doesn't it? He even kind of talks like him a little bit. Little Evil Sheldon. So Evil Sheldon, I should just call him Lee. I'm going to get confused. Okay, so Evil Lee. What is with the names in this episode? These are the weirdest names. Okay. Anyway, so they're talking with little Tony on the phone, and they're like, we're aware of the situation, meaning they already knew what was going on before he even called, which is, it says a lot right there. And then he pans over, you see a picture of Kate in her uniform being printed out, probably all the information they need to know about, like her badge number, all that stuff. He says she's about to be removed permanently, or they're about to be removed permanently. Then we're inside the interrogation room and we see little Tony and Lee and Kate with her captain or her lieutenant talking. And Lee is little Tony's lawyer and he plays some pretty good cards. So Kate starts to kind of lose her cool a little bit inside of the interrogation room, which, I mean, to be fair, Lee, again, I guess they're just trying to show us how powerful Wolferman Hart is. But, like, there's no way a lawyer will be like, oh, yeah, strike that from the record. Oh, yeah, like, make sure you add that to the record. Like, he doesn't have that much power, but
yeah.
I get what they're trying to convey. So then he pulls out his trump card and he says, if you basically try to interfere and step in anymore, we will open this case to the court of public opinion. It means we will shine a light into the darkest corners of this precinct and give the people a view of the brutality and callousness of this police force that would make Mark Furman look like Gentle Ben. And wow. I mean, he's super irritating, but also like Kate clearly is able to get away with a ton. And we have seen her manhandle Tony and others. And it is a little bit jarring to watch this episode, especially in our current climate with the whole conversation surrounding police brutality. What Lee is threatening is not totally unreasonable, which makes this even more compelling because police should be held accountable for the violence they commit. The problem is, I think he's saying that they would sway the public into seeing the police in an unfavorable light, especially as we're shown that he has power to omit and add things to the record. So it may not be necessarily an accurate portrayal. But again, this episode is ahead of its time in the sense that like we're already seeing things. And the fact that he talks about Mark Furman. So Mark Furman is allegedly the racist LA cop that was accused of planting evidence against OJ Simpson in his double murder trial. So they're hinting at right here that there's police brutality because of racism.
And corruption. Which I was like,
wow, this is really, yeah, and corruption. I don't know. I just felt like there was a lot that went into that line. And that's why we love Buffy and Angel, right? Because a lot of times the villains aren't always so black and white. Sometimes they say valid things that are worth looking into, you know?
Yeah, this episode is definitely really interesting to watch in our, like, in our today times. Is that even a word? Like
our current climate.
Yeah. And our current like political climate and everything that's happened in the last few years. It really like it definitely has like a deeper meaning, I think, today. Mm-hmm. Which is like super appreciated because this came out in 1999. Like
yeah. And I mean, I think sometimes we fall into the trap of like, oh my gosh, like police brutality is getting worse or whatever is getting worse. And no, it's always been around. It's always been really bad. It's just with the access of cameras and everybody having access to a phone or a camera, we're just starting to see it more now. But I always just appreciate when Buffy and Angel are willing to kind of like go there even subtly, you know?
Absolutely.
All right. So back in Angel's office, Cordelia is trying to make small talk with Angel and he's just kind of not really giving her very much. And she's like, you have pensive face. And Angel's like, I don't think this is done. I think there was something about little Tony. I think that, you know, something else is going to come up or whatever. And Cordelia's like, gosh, how could you be thinking about anything else when you just haven't looked at my shoes? And then she like shows him her feet. Which, did you notice what color her shoes are? Burnt orange.
Burnt orange.
It's got to be intentional, man. I'm just going to keep pointing this out. I'm sorry. Everyone hates me now. Burnt and you know what? Orange. Everyone who's watching and listening along with us is never not going to be able to see all of the costume choices any differently ever again. So you're welcome. You will always remember me. Carry me along.
You're with doing you the your Lord's re-watches. Work, Sarah.
I am. Color theory. And then Angel's like, look, Cordelia, women's shoes. Ben just don't. Doyle drops in and immediately is like, Cordelia, great shoes. And I was like, you know what? Doyle is the literal definition of if he wanted to, he would.
Okay, but maybe he heard the conversation a little bit. And was like, oh, this is my chance to say something right for once.
I mean, yeah, possibly. But I also think that that's not a fair comparison either way because Doyle has a massive crush on Cordelia. So he's going
true.
To notice
every and they spend aspect. A lot more time together. Well, it seems like they spend a lot more time together than Cordelia and Angel do.
Okay, this scene cracked me up, or like this like conversation, because Doyle comes in. He's like, you are right. Papazian's planning something. Angel's like, what'd you hear? Just that he's planning something. Oh, yeah. I knew he must be planning something. And Cordelia's over there like, what a bunch of idiots.
That was definitely, I feel like, that was definitely Glenn Quinn and David Boreanaz just like bouncing off of each other, like just having the best time.
All right. So in the cop bar, Kate enters in. And so the script wrote in, like what was supposed to happen was she comes in, someone gives her a drink, and it's inferred that it's paid for. And then how she notices her dad is there, he mentions something to her. Like he speaks up behind her and says, so Tony Papazian, and then that's how she notices. But in the episode, they changed it to her dad paid for it for her, and that's when she notices him and then goes back. So I don't know. I just thought that was kind of an interesting, like, subtle change. And I think that they added it in because it makes you feel like he only did it because Kate brought in Tony, almost like he only shows approval when she does something that he deems worth praiseworthy, not necessarily because
– not because she's his daughter. Yeah.
Yeah. Or like he loves her, or like he's just proud of her just because he loves her, you know? Yeah. I like that subtle little change because it tells you so much about their dynamic. So then she goes and sits down next to him, and he is like busy working. He's like, well, congratulations, without even like looking up. And then he immediately just goes to like Bummersville. He's like, well, here's hoping the bus doesn't fall apart before you finish filling the paperwork, because he's like lawyers and stuff. And you can tell Kate's a little bothered by this, like, ah, I did something really great today. Can we just like sit with that for a minute and like really celebrate it, you know? So then Harlan, the plainclothes detective, comes in. And he shows her that they have to go to sensitivity training.
Fun.
So fun. My husband's in the military, and he tells me all the time how he has to go to – it's like sensitivity training, or like – I forget what it's exactly
de-escalation
called.
De-escalation training or something.
It's basically like don't sexually harass your coworkers.
Yeah. And
he's like, it's just – it is necessary. Some people need to hear it, but it's also just like exhausting.
It's usually like hours. It's like a whole day of training.
It's that you take an entire day. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So the word is that it's because of what Kate did. Oh, man. And then Harlan makes this little like thing. You think they'll make us hug? And then Kate says, I'm not hugging you, sweat boy, which is interesting because we found out later Harlan has a crush on her.
Yeah.
And then Trevor says the most boomer thing ever. Glad I'm getting out. In my day, we didn't need any damn sensitivity training.
Oh, my God. Nobody with the name Trevor should be saying this.
It's so true. Herb would.
Herb Saunders. Angel is older than Trevor.
That's why he probably picked an Herb name.
Yeah.
In the police precinct, we have Alan Lloyd. He is the guy that's in charge of the sensitivity training. He's very nice, and he like kind of gets them all to loosen up. And I just, when I saw him, I was like, this guy is like Toby from The Office. Everybody hates him. Like if Kate were Michael, like she's like, get out of here, Toby.
Never seen The Office. I'm sorry.
Gosh, are you serious? Leia, get a TV. Girl. What? Okay. Tell me what you have seen so I can start giving all these references that you actually like.
Like TV shows?
I don't know. What have you seen in general? List them all off. Let's go.
I've seen Buffy. I've seen Angel.
No, duh.
I've seen Grey's Anatomy.
Okay.
Supernatural. I've seen Gossip Girl. I've seen recently Snowpiercer. I've seen, I don't know. I can't like think of all the things that I've seen.
Gosh, no, off the top of your head. All right, send me an itemized list later on so I can make sure that all my references include you from now on. Just need to bring in another guest in so that they can laugh at all my jokes and get all my references. Where's Chrissy? I don't even know Chrissy so well.
I've seen like a few episodes of The Office here and there, so I feel like I kind of know who Toby is, but like I don't
who's Toby?
Like? The guy that everyone hates. He's got like
Toby is the guy that's in, he's like HR.
Okay, yes, he's like
this guy gives off major Toby vibes, and Michael hates it because Toby is always like harsh and is mellow. Like saying, hey, Michael, like, you can't do that. And Michael's all like, ah, come on, Toby, you're no fun. Nobody wants you here kind of thing. So anyway, that's a very long-winded explanation of saying that's how I view Lloyd, but nobody cares. So moving on. And once again, in true Angel and Buffy fashion, they give the villain really good lines and lines that are actually, you know, kind of true. He says, what I'm not going to do is waste your time. What I'm going to give you is tools to help you experience the full range of human emotions. Learning that won't just make you better people. It'll help you diffuse violent situations in the field. It'll allow you to manage your aggression so you won't feel so tired all the time. In short, I'll make you better cops, which I was like, this is so good. Like, for those who are proponents of defunding the police, whether like that's in its entirety or just in certain aspects, this is a, like a huge aspect of that is this idea of wanting to make it more about de-escalation versus just jumping straight into it after
like getting to the root of the problem instead of just using like violence.
Yep. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think this episode does a good job of showing that there are times when violence, unfortunately, is necessary. And like we talked about it on Buffy, like there are times where there are people that cross those lines to the point where it's like some people deserve to have severe punishments. But like, you know, the majority of people, like, again, I'm getting into controversial territory, but like being locked up for having weed or other things like that, you know, maybe there's other ways that we could go about it. Yeah. So I kind of like that they have that here. So he pulls out the talking stick, gives it to Officer Heath. Heath starts to really open up, talking about how he had a ton of brothers, how he just felt like he didn't feel like he could actually open up. He had to shut down his emotions. I was like, this is so relatable, really good. And then Kate immediately cuts through the situation with humor, trying to diffuse it because she's uncomfortable by her emotions. And the thing is this episode did a really good job of showing us why Kate does this because we've met her dad. We get it. So Lloyd gives Kate the talking stick and pretty much nails her exactly. Says genuine emotion makes you uncomfortable. Your inappropriate sarcasm masks anger. And do you know what anger is, Kate? It's just fear. Fear of being hurt. Fear of loss. You've been hurt. And just like completely pinpoints her. It's really good. Yeah.
Putting her on blast in front of everybody.
He really is. This poor girl kind of goes through the ringer. But I like that we really, really get to know Kate. I don't know. I really enjoy it. I have a new appreciation for the character.
Me too, actually.
So Angel and Doyle are trying to get more information. They talk to Johnny Red, who is part of an MLM and is trying to recruit them into the gym.
This is LA, people.
Totally is. Kind of gives them a really good place to look. But what he says that kind of catches Angel's attention is the fact that they are planning something. And Angel immediately goes, they're going to hurt Kate. I know what's going to happen. So back at the police precinct, Angel shows up trying to warn Kate. Kate is noticeably very soft, like a lot softer than she was before. At that point, we haven't clued in that she's under a spell or anything because like she genuinely seems like someone who is been moved and has had a breakthrough.
Right.
I liked the scene of her. I feel like it was the most real without feeling like it was forced, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So she apologizes to Angel for being so hard on him. He's like, this isn't you. Like, what is going on here? She asks him in a moment of vulnerability if he would go with her to her dad's retirement party thing. And Angel's like, okay, sure. I don't mind. And I really love how she goes, that was easy. I'm relieved. I don't know. I felt like there was a really easy chemistry between the two of them and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too.
Kate doesn't take him seriously when he tells her that she might be in danger. And she tries to psychoanalyze little Tony.
Angel's just confused the whole
time. Are
you okay? He's like, what is happening
here? Yeah. And she's like, oh, and even like Kate is like, wow, I'm turning into Dr. Laura. Don't worry, Angel. I'm sure I'll be back to my usual level of cynicism in no time. Angel's like, okay, whatever you say. Then we find out that Lloyd is actually like some sort of warlock or something like that. The script says Lloyd's home base in the Institute for Sensitivity Awareness, not unlike a Scientology church. Woo.
Ooh, okay.
Not wrong, though.
Nope.
We see that Lee is there that Lloyd has been hired by Lee. And of course, he has like, you know, a huge like satanic shrine or whatever. And I was like, oh, of course he's evil, because actual healing and communication either gets cut off or
you have to be in a cult or something.
Yeah, right. Yep. True fashion, true Buffy fashion. So at the bar, this scene, oh man, Angel and Kate arrive. Kate looks beautiful. I love her in this dress. Her hair is amazing. She makes that, what's that statement? Like, I think Angel tells her like, hey, don't worry. Like, there's enough cops. I don't think you're going to get hurt. And she's like, oh no, I'm like really nervous about this speech and stuff. He's like, well, just, you know, picture your audience in their underwear.
She like looks him up and down. She goes, already started. Or something like that.
And she's like way ahead of you. Like she just like, focus, Kate, focus. So good. I love how raw and unfiltered they made her. It was refreshing, yeah. Honestly. And it seems to go right over Angel's head. Like he doesn't even notice it at all.
Angel's clueless. Just so, it's so cute.
Hey, and you know what? We got to see him in his underwear last episode. So we all immediately went back to that mental image.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I watched Angel. The entire series picturing Angel in his underwear. Doesn't everybody do that?
We know Chrissy does.
Chrissy
and Steph. Shout out to Prophecy Girls.
Yes. That's our little crew there. Our little Angel Thirst crew.
Angel cult. All right. So then Kate brings Angel up to meet Trevor. This felt uncomfortably like the young man meeting the father for the first time.
Yeah.
And Trevor is just insensitive. He's like, oh, like this old thing, this isn't that big of a deal. And Kate like actually like speaks her mind. She's like, why do you do that? And he's like, do what? She's like, why do you minimize things that are clearly important? And I don't know if she says important to you, but like, why are you minimizing something that like we should be celebrating, that is actually worth celebrating? And I don't know about you, Leia, but my parents do this, specifically my dad. Like they really struggle with celebrating accomplishments or when people make something that they've done out to be like really big or whatever it is. And I think that it comes from this idea they don't feel like they deserve it. Like it's this whole lack of self-worth, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I have definitely experienced the same. And I think that's also how like we grew up, like a lot of people our age, that's how we were brought up. Like, don't make a big deal out of things. And it's funny because I feel like it's not our generation, like, you know, the generation that gets medals for everything. Like, I don't think that was our generation. I think that's the one after us. But yeah.
You just threw boomers, Gen X, and Gen Z all under the bus.
Right. Sorry.
I don't know. I think it's just hard because, like, I have a lot of compassion and sympathy for our parents' generation, even as I see how toxic they can be, simply because they just were never taught how to manage their emotions. They were never taught to celebrate the things that they did, to feel things. And so it's just almost like they're afraid to feel because it feels selfish, or it feels like you didn't earn it or whatever it is. Or even if you did earn it, I don't know. There's just this like this way of minimizing things that just – it almost turns very toxic, because let people celebrate you. Like it's almost selfish to sit there and minimize it when other people come up to you and just like want to celebrate with you. You know what I mean? And then he immediately jumps to assuming that Angel and Katie are seeing each other, which, I mean, it's a fair assumption, but you just don't do that. And he's like, well, it's good to see her out with a man. I'm starting to wonder if she didn't lean in the other direction. Ugh. Awkward. Like, awkward.
Why?
Even if she did.
Would you say that? Like, yeah.
So then the lieutenant starts, introduces Kate. Kate goes up. And this scene. All right, Leia, what did you think of this scene?
I mean, I thought Elizabeth Rome did a really good job of like playing that like desperation and that kind of, she's having like a breakdown, basically. I think it's supposed to be very cringy. I think it's supposed to be very uncomfortable for us to watch. Because that's how I felt during it. I was just like, oh my God, what is happening? What is happening? What is happening?
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was a great way to kind of summarize a lot of Kate's history with her dad and her mom and why he is the way he is. And I thought it was really funny that, like, everyone in the audience was, like, people in the audience were, like, agreeing. Like, oh, mm-hmm. like, say your truth, Kate. And mm-hmm. I don't know. I thought it was a great scene. I can see why people would think it was, like, cringy and, like, maybe too much. But I think it's supposed to be like that. You're supposed mm-hmm. to come out of it being like, oh, my God. Like, either you're embarrassed for her or you're rooting for her. Or I found myself being like, yeah, like, tell him, you know. But I can see how other people would be like, oh, my God, how embarrassing. I think that's it's supposed to come off like that. I don't know. What did you think?
Yeah, this scene gives me simultaneously like secondhand embarrassment because it is so raw. But watching it this time, because it is like probably the one scene I remember from this episode. Like when I think of this episode, I think of this scene. But I also really resonated with what she was saying. Again, for the same reasons I mentioned before about how our parents' generation doesn't like strong emotion. Really. And that's specifically both my parents, but my dad. I love the way that this was shot and framed. I, like you said, I think that they did it intentionally to make it seem very vulnerable. Mm-hmm. The audience is mostly male officers, the contrast between them and their uniforms and her dress, the fact that she's kind of in the spotlight, it's supposed to highlight the embarrassment of her breaking down and being vulnerable. They cut many times to her hands as she's like fiddling with, I think, like her purse straps or something like that. She's probably already struggling with being taken seriously just by being a woman in a man's world, mm-hmm. especially during the 90s. Like, I mean, it's hard now, but like, especially back in the 90s, along with the idea that women are deemed more emotional and therefore weaker. I think this was probably, it wasn't just humiliating for her dad. It was humiliating for her because she's worked so hard to be seen as really tough and vulnerable, or not vulnerable, but like impenetrable. And so I think that's what made it a little bit harder to watch, because you're like, oh, like it felt like she was being violated in a way because she was being forced to be so vulnerable when that wasn't fully like her choice.
Her choice. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can see that.
But I felt like she acted her heart out. It hit me really hard. Mm-hmm. I think I felt a new appreciation and love for Kate that I haven't felt like in the episodes up till now. I kind of wish that this happened when she wasn't under a spell, because I think it would have been a little bit more impactful. But I definitely walked away being more intrigued by what they're going to do with Kate in the future, and that she like is a full-fledged character now, not just somebody that's shoehorned into episodes.
Yeah. So. Yep. And I like that it's her backstory is not – it doesn't have anything to do with supernatural things. You know, like we know Angel's backstory and his vampirism and things like that. It's all very dark, and then Doyle's and whatever. But and then Cordelia's, like we talked about it last episode, but it just was a little bit shallow, like why she's looking for redemption or what her story is. But with Kate, it's like very relatable. It's very mm-hmm. like human. Mm-hmm. And it really gives you an insight into what's going to happen to her character later on. And it is really interesting. And I think, you know, I first watched this when I was a lot younger, so I feel like I didn't really understand what was happening. But as an adult, it's mm-hmm. a lot more relatable. Mm-hmm. And it does really hit hard. And I think Elizabeth Rome, like, literally acted her ass off mm-hmm. in that scene. And again, I think it's meant to be uncomfortable, you know, like she delivered what I think the scene was meant to like convey. And yeah, it was definitely great.
Yeah. And I mean, this is not a slight on people who feel like it's so uncomfortable. They can't watch it or they don't like it because it was uncomfortable. But I sometimes wonder if like as a society, we're afraid to sit with our deep emotions. And so watching someone that is so vulnerable break down like mm-hmm. that, it's not always like fun to watch. It is uncomfortable. And so I think like it's good for us sometimes to sit with that and be like, okay, well, why are these big emotions making me not feel so great? You know, do I have a problem with seeing other people like break down like that?
Yeah. And I think it's a lot of, especially with like the older generations, it's like if you show like big emotion like that or talk about it or admit that you even feel them. It's like a big sign of weakness. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's obviously, like, in today's world is, like, viewed a lot differently, I think, mm-hmm. especially after this pandemic that has, like, highlighted a lot of, you know, it was a traumatic, like, 2 years. And I think a lot of people have, like, realized that it's actually not a sign of weakness to feel big emotions because you go through things that, like, kind of change you, right? So, but yeah, the pandemic was terrible and it's really relatable what she's talking about, like, the big emotions that she's expressing.
Yeah. Well, I think not just that, too. I think there's also this level of, like, we protect our parents' reputation even if they're toxic to us. We mm-hmm. don't air our dirty laundry in front of our parents' peers, let alone, you know, anybody. So I think right. the fact that, like, her dad's sitting there having to be called out is incredibly humiliating on another level, apart from it being uncomfortable that she's so emotional about it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a line that they cut out. So she says, and maybe that's why I wanted to be a cop too. And then the script says, like, if we spoke the same language, you'd notice me again. And then it jumps into after mom died, you stopped, you know, it was like you couldn't stand the sight of me. Oh, boy.
So it's almost like Kate only wanted to be a cop because that was the only way for her to get closer to her dad. And that's really sad.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's also interesting that Trevor immediately recognizes that something's off and goes, like, what did they do to her in that sensitivity training? But it's also sad because he looks, like, right past what she's trying to say and just kind of brushes it off as, oh, that's just the beer speaking. That's just whatever happened to her in sensitivity training, you know? So, like, there's people breaking down all over. Some people are angry. Some people are, you know, very validating. Everyone starts fighting. Angel completely, like, hauls the lieutenant out with one hand. Did you see him just, like, grab the guy? Yeah, it looks like it was completely effortless. Yep. And Trevor helps bring people out. And as he's leaving, too, he says, I'll take him back to the precinct, let him sleep it off with the drunks. And then in the script, he looked back at Kate. I don't know that it's very noticeable in the actual episode, but he looks back at Kate and it says, who is just a splayed open wound, not contorted in pain, just an open face, the tears streaming down. Oh, Trevor moves off. You should do likewise. Basically saying, like, you're drunk. That's why you're acting this way. All right, so then we are back in Angel's office and Cordelia storms in, is like, all right, what's the big emergency? These middle of the nights are really eating into my potential social life.
Cordelia is just sitting in her apartment hanging out with Phantom Dennis. She's not doing anything exciting.
I mean, if I had a beautiful apartment like that, I'd be hanging out in my house a lot. She's like, why I ever thought it'd be a nifty idea to work with a ventriloquist.
Get saved.
Oh, gosh. So funny. So Kate is just – she's now – and I think it's really interesting. They had her have that breakdown, like sobbing, crying, all this stuff. And now this is her open. This is her relaxed. This is her free. And they're showing, like, when you actually let out all those emotions, you feel better.
Yeah.
I love how Kate is, like, not so subtly hitting on Angel here. You have the most intense eyes. I see such an old soul.
You're not wrong.
There's not an insincere bone in your body, is there? And Angel's like, okay, oh, focus God. Here, Kate. I really need you to, like get it together there, woman. So he's trying to figure out who was running the sensitivity training. They've, like, nailed it down to that's got to be what's going on. And let me just say, Elizabeth Ramos got to have so much fun with this scene. Like, it is just, I don't know how everyone kept a straight face. Honestly. So funny.
I don't think they did. I think they probably had to do a lot of takes.
There's a couple times I could tell people were trying to hold back a smile. Yeah. So Angel leaves to go and try and run the address from the pamphlet that she gives him. And then Kate kind of, like, psychoanalyzes Doyle and Cordelia and is like, aha, I see what's going on here. She's like, someone's got a crush. And Doyle's like, what? Let's not go down here. And then she's like, it's right there to Cordelia, how he feels about you and you don't know what to do about it. And I do like that Cordelia actually like pauses and like seems to be thinking about it for a minute. So I'm like, oh, Cordelia is actually aware of this then.
Of course she is. Did you think that she wasn't? Cordelia knew this whole time.
No, I definitely think. I think there's been plenty of clues.
Yeah.
Yep. So Cordelia screams for Angel, comes back in. He's like, all right, I got the address. He's like, you guys are going to have to stay here with Kate and help her out. Takes off. And Kate's like waffling between crying and smiling, just completely like falling apart. So Angel enters into the sensitivity training building. And Lloyd is there. They fight. And we go back to Doyle and Cordelia. And Kate's like, no, I need to go find my dad. And I like that they had her start saying daddy from the moment she walked into the bar. Because like a very subtle but very important phrasing. She'd called him dad up until that point. And it's very like childlike. And very like emotional, you know. This part just cracked me up. She's like rambling and pulls out her gun and says, I don't want to come off as insensitive, but if either one of you try to stop me, I'll have to blow you the crap away.
When I tell you, I screamed when she said it. I was like, what is going on?
Oh, so good. This is my favorite Kate, I think, right here. Oh, it's
oh
so
my God.
Good.
This was excellent. Like, excellent scene. I honestly think probably one of my favorite scenes of this entire episode.
From here on out, it just gets better and better and better. Oh, Angel's like, what demon do you worship? Which one gives you your power? And Lloyd's like, a whole bunch, actually. I'm a polytheist. So funny. Okay, but then they start fighting. Angel's like, what did you do to Kate Lockley? And he gets exposed, obviously, to the stick or whatever it is that's going on. And then Lloyd's like, give yourself permission to open up. What were your parents like? And Angel says, oh, my parents were great. Tastes a lot like chicken. What is this dark humor? That's so dark.
It's just, yeah.
Yikes.
I mean, he asked him. What was he going to
say? He did ask him, but woo, that was a lot. That was a lot more than Lloyd probably was expecting to hear. All right, back at the precinct, chaos is ensuing. Everyone is like either crying or they're talking about their feelings. Heath's in there talking about how it's not right that people will be locked up, makes them more brutal than they were. And I was like, why do I feel like Tim Minear is low-key for prison reform? Because this is
100%. He feels like it. Definitely saying some things in this episode.
Yeah, he was. He was like, how close can I get to the line?
Yeah.
Okay, so fun fact. According to IMDb, I didn't spot him because I read it after the episode or after I finished watching the episode. But Manny the pig, who was hiding Spike in the dark, is apparently can be seen in somewhere in this scene as one of the prisoners.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Kind of cool. So now I need to go back and see if I can find him. I don't remember what he looks like at all.
Did we even see him? Yeah, I was going to say, did we even see him?
I think he was the guy that Angel was beating up when he was looking for information
before he finds Spike in the alley. And he gave up Spike like immediately.
Yeah.
He was just like.
I'm pretty sure that's him.
Oh, but it was a setup. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And Heath like lets everybody out and says, remember this, brothers, is an act of kindness. And they pile on him.
They pummel him.
Yeah. There's a time and a place. Oh, and just so many funny moments. The traffic cop. You want to talk about whiplash? I'll tell you about whiplash. I get emotional whiplash from having to deal with people like you did day in and day out. If anyone's the victim here, it's me. I wrote it in my notes. I said, I feel like this guy is saying everything you want to say to the people you talk to on the phone, Leia. I literally wrote it in my notes.
Me at my job every single day.
I know. My own children are afraid of me. I can't even make love to my wife. Whoa. Oh, man.
Very relatable. Very relatable.
This is probably the most relatable Angel episode so far.
Yeah.
Kate arrives at the precinct. Angel also arrives at the precinct. And so do Cordelia and Doyle. Then we find out Angel has also been affected by the talking stick. This whole... Let's hug it out. Oh, my word.
Cordelia's like, ew, ew, get away from me.
Oh, my word. I swear that smile is David Boreanaz 100%.
Oh, it's so funny.
Funny. Doyle immediately pins him. It's like, hey, I think he found Mr. Sensitivity. Angel says, patting his chest, he was right in here all the time, just waiting to come out. Gosh, what our folks do to us, huh?
I feel like there's a lot more than just your folks, Angel.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's not put the blame all on here. You've lived without your folks for like 200 years now.
Yeah.
And then Angel's like, Cordelia, do you have any idea just how precious you are? And Doyle's like, let's talk about that stick here. Get away from my Cordelia. Angel's like, he uses it as a talisman. Anyone who handles it becomes infected. He admitted to me after I threatened him with physical violence.
He's just like so ashamed. He's so ashamed that he did this. I feel like everybody needs to go and just, you don't even have to watch the whole episode. Just go and watch these last few scenes of Angel just being under the influence of the whatever talking stick. Because it's just amazing.
It's so funny. It's so funny. And Angel has just never been more relatable. But I mean, to see such a character who's so broody be like this, I honestly don't know how he didn't find his one moment of true happiness. Because I feel like he reached some level of catharsis a little bit.
Seriously.
You know?
I mean, I love my broody Angel. This is nice in like little doses, but mm-hmm. I love my broody Angel.
I think that like, I like what everyone says about how this is just a candy episode. It's just so fun. It's so fun. And the comedic timing between everybody, and especially once we get to Kate and Angel, both being Mr. and Mrs. Sensitivity. Oh, my God. So good. I think that's when I'm like, I see the chemistry now.
Yeah.
I see it. Take it all back. So Angel's afraid of doing more violence. He's actually even like feeling bad for little Tony. And Doyle and Cordelia are like, dude, like, get your vamp face on. Come on, we gotta go.
He's like, nope.
Kate needs you.
Nope.
I don't want to. You both withdraw when I go vamp. I feel you judge me. We won't judge you, Angel, will we? Doyle's like, no. She's like, give it a try. And he's like, closeness is too important to me right now. And they're like, come on, Angel. So then Doyle's like, fine, I'm going to do this myself. He goes, he knocks on the door. The cop's like, we're closed. Doyle's like, you're the police. You can't close. The guy's like, why not? Haven't we done enough? It's always find this, rescue that with you people. See how you like it.
This is another one of my how I feel at work.
Yes. That's how I feel with my children.
Or like anybody who's ever worked in retail. This is like, you know that customer that wants to like come in at like, you close at 10 and they come in at like 9:59. Yeah. They're like, I just want one quick thing. And you're like, no, get out.
Yeah, you don't understand. Like the longer you're here, that's an added extra 20 minutes because I still like, I close my doors. It's not like I can just go home. Like there's a whole bunch of stuff I have to do after like, I close
the door. Is this not enough? Yeah. Was the whole day being open not enough for you?
Yeah.
Leave.
I give and it's not enough for you people. Literally me every day. I get it. All right. So then Harlan approaches Kate and it's hard to sympathize with him because he's incredibly misogynistic and very much like, I deserve this. I'm entitled to you. You sitting there smelling and looking the way you do is
so gross.
Your fault. Like, it's just very misogynistic and it reeks of privilege. It's not okay. Little Tony comes out. He has his rifle. And it's interesting. So the actor who plays little Tony, I actually, when I was watching it, I felt like he did a really good job of being believably menacing. Sure, he is an Italian stereotype, but I think he played the part that they wrote for him really well. But apparently Tim Minear regrets the actor that they cast in the role, saying that John, I think it's Capodice, was very good. The character was cliched, a Sopranos knockoff. So I don't know so much that it's who they cast Tim, I think it's more that you just wrote a cliche.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just the character itself. But yeah, I agree. I thought he did a really good job.
So little Tony is very much gunning for Kate. And then we have this entire dialogue happens without seeing Angel, Cordelia, or Doyle. You just hear them talking about trying to break into the storeroom. And Angel's like, this is vandalism. I can't say that I'm like really comfortable with this. Cordelia's like, don't argue. It's the only way in. Which is hilarious.
Also, he pushes in the steel bars, like the bars, he just kind of puts his hand on them and they just fall through. And I'm like, what? Like,
he's so strong.
Wasn't he like stuck in cages several times on Buffy and he like couldn't get out?
It was the sunlight.
Yes. Yes, of course.
I just love how the episode has kind of like turned everything on its head, because Cordelia was saying he wasn't sensitive enough. And here he's like being extremely sensitive. And Cordelia's like, I don't care. Like, enough. Just do what you're going to do. And it's like, okay, what do you actually want here, Cordelia? Because, you know, he's actually telling you the things you want to hear. He's being...
I know exactly what Cordelia wants.
Yeah, yeah.
She wants it to be about her. And it's not about her.
Truer words, man.
She wants to be appreciated for the things that she does, not just in general.
So they come through the window and Angel's like, wow, that's vandalism. And Doyle's like, we'll take care of it later. Moving on. And then we have, would you come on? He's like, what's the magic word? She's like, ugh. He's like, no, I don't believe ugh is the magic word, if one would even call it a word. And even then, certainly not a magical one.
Oh my God.
She's like, we don't have time for this.
This exchange is so funny. It's just so funny.
Every single bit of dialogue is just like side splitting. It's hilarious. So little Tony sees Kate, and then Angel steps in and is like, I'm feeling some serious negative energy in this room. And Kate and Angel just kind of go back and forth. Both of them like, yeah, you know, that gun really makes you come off as hostile. And little Tony is like, wow, that sensitivity training I paid for is like worth all of the money. But then I don't really understand this moment, like what causes Kate and Angel to just kind of like snap out of it briefly enough to be able to shoot him with the gun and hit him with the chair and then like go right back. I don't know. I know it's a plot device, but I don't quite understand why it happened.
I don't know. Yeah. I feel like it just had to happen. It doesn't really make sense because they were like so against violence one minute and then the next they're just like, you know, both going at him. But
yeah,
I guess you just kind of have to suspend your disbelief.
It's worth it because it's hilarious. But yeah, it doesn't make sense. But who cares? So Angel wallops on Tony and he says, you know, Anthony, you could be a rainbow and not, does quotations mark, a painbow.
A painbow.
What? That's got to be the cheesiest line I've ever heard. Like, anyone
who says that? What does that even mean?
Do you remember it? I don't know if you've ever seen it. Hopefully you get this reference. But there was an old YouTube video. It was one of the first YouTube videos to ever go viral, up there with like the Numa Numa guy. It was Charlie the Unicorn. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Oh, no. Dang. Okay. I want you after this to go look up Charlie the Unicorn on YouTube.
Okay.
So it's literally like, Charlie, with the magic Pleurodon, Charlie. And it's just like, it's absolute nonsense. My brother was obsessed with it. It was like, it's literal teenage boy humor. And that's what this reminds me of. The whole painbow thing.
Painbow.
Literal teenage boy behavior. And it's just, it's really funny coming from Angel. Yeah. The magical Pleurodon or Pleurodon, Charlie. I don't remember. Anyway. Okay. Moving on.
Another reference I don't get.
Gosh, man.
Another one for the books.
I feel like, you're probably not even going to get this reference. I feel like Captain America, when he's talking to Falcon and Falcon has him, like they write down that list of all these things that he has to catch up with.
I know that reference.
You know that reference?
Yay! I know that reference.
I feel so heard right now. Thank you, Leia.
See, I know some things sometimes.
You are hip with the kids, up on the times.
Only if it has to do with Chris Evans or David Chris Boreanaz. Evans.
Yeah. Okay, I'm getting sidetracked. Here we are. Okay. This moment between Kate and Angel is probably the first time I felt like chemistry between the two of them. You.
No,
come
you.
Here. And then they just give each other, it's just, and you could tell Elizabeth Rome in particular is struggling so hard not to just break down and start laughing. And like, especially when they say, it's so sad, isn't it? She goes, some people just need to live in the problem. This is very funny. All right. So little Tony is back behind bars trying to call his lawyer. And very interestingly enough, Lee says, sorry, dude, I'm afraid that's not possible. You're too much of a liability. We can't risk that type of exposure. So they clearly don't want people to know that they are navigating. Like, I think it's pretty obvious they're corrupt, but they don't want to make it obvious.
I think it speaks volume that, like, Wolfram and Hart is, you know, we know that they're a law firm, but they're willing to drop a client if it kind of interferes with their image, with how they are able to move around in the town. So I think that kind of shows that they're, you know, they're not somebody to be messed with. Like, they're willing to cut loose from, like, people that employ them. And then obviously they mentioned like the senior partners again, which I think is like, you know, it's just we're getting more information about this very interesting law firm.
Well, and I think too, it shows that they don't have unlimited resources and that they actually like can be taken down potentially.
Yeah, so. Like maybe like a point of weakness. I think it's more like Wolfram and Hart needs to appear, I guess, good to the public so that they can continue their shady dealings behind closed doors without anybody asking questions. But I guess, yeah.
This just like this little conversation is very telling. So the next morning at the precinct, everyone looks like they're hungover. Everyone's looking very ashamed. They're not looking each other in the eye. Angel shows up. Is like, how do you feel? And Kate's like, I feel pretty foolish. You? And he's like, I'm all right. Nothing phases Angel anymore.
Honestly, what does he have to be embarrassed about?
Well, and I think he also, like, because he knows it was supernatural too, I think there's an element of like, it's not like I was just intoxicated or something. Like, it was like other forces that were meddling in with things as well. So like, it wasn't anybody's fault. It just happened versus Kate's like, oh man, like maybe I did something or whatever. So Kate's like, internal affairs is investigating. They think someone spiked the punch, the blue bar. And I'm just like, oh man, like at some point Kate's going to figure out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Then we have like this weird like tension where she's like, did I say anything to you? He's like, I don't really remember. And then she's like, all right, I'm going to get to work. He's like, okay. And they kind of like leave. It kind of felt like Giles and Joyce after Band Candy, like, okay,
yeah,
take off.
Except nothing happened, so I don't really know why there's this awkwardness.
They hugged, like, but it was so platonic. Like,
they hugged. Like, yeah,
but I think it's like Kate feeling so emotionally raw because she laid herself out there for everyone to see, so I understand like the awkwardness on her part. So Trevor shows up. I'm never gonna get over that his name is Trevor. Ridiculous.
What a terrible name. Sorry for any terrible Trevors out there. I didn't mean
it's that. A terrible name for an older man, but I know eventually like there's gonna be young guys that will be old men. It's just weird for like our generation. Anyway, okay, it's not important. So Trevor is like, Katie, got your message on my machine. And you kind of think, hey, is this gonna be the moment where they connect, they bond? It's framed as if he's had a change of heart, but no. He says, you make an idiot of yourself, embarrass me in front of the guys. You don't bring that up ever again. As far as I'm concerned, it didn't happen.
Ouch.
So initially, Tim Minear wrote a big TV ending where they hug, they make up. And Joss actually suggested that instead, Kate's father acts as though nothing has changed. Tim says, if it had gone the other way, I think the whole thing would have collapsed. That's really Joss knowing best, which is... I think it's a gut punch. And it, again, is subversive. We expect, oh, like they had that emotional breakthrough. That's it. But the fact that he didn't is so much more realistic and I think makes so much sense.
Yeah. And I think if they had wrapped it up in a neat bow at the end of this episode, they couldn't have really milked the storyline any longer for future episodes. Because I feel like
that is true.
We just learned about this in this episode and it's going to get resolved right away. Like, this is huge. Like, this, I think, you know, defines a lot of what Kate's character is. And I feel like she would have almost become irrelevant moving forward if we know about this, but it's not really like a focal point anymore. So it definitely, yeah, I definitely don't feel like wrapping it up would have been a good idea.
I think it would have done the deep emotions that Kate felt a disservice, because this is like years and years of pain and trauma, right? And to have it all, and just it's like, kind of like,
had they just had one single conversation, all of this would have been fixed. But it's like, that's not really how these things work in real life either.
Yeah. Have it all wrapped up in a nice, neat bow. And it's like, okay, cool. Resolved. They never have to work through this again. But the fact that like Kate at least now knows what it feels like to air everything, but then to be shot down, it'll be interesting to see, okay, is she going to continue to just put walls up, or is she going to move forward from this and be like, well, you know, I can't change him, so I'm just going to try and work on myself. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see.
I think it definitely keeps us interested in Kate's character in like a brand new way that we weren't before. Before, I was just like, oh, this mysterious cop lady that like maybe likes Angel, blah, blah, blah. But now we're like, okay, like she's got her own baggage that she needs to kind of take a look into.
Agreed. I like that her story isn't so centered around Angel now. It's not like a, because I think what was pulling us all forward was the will they, won't they? Will they, there be a relationship? And also what's going to happen if slash when Angel or Kate finds out that Angel's a vampire. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it was all very centered around Angel, which he's the main character. But giving her a full story with her dad just gives a lot of autonomy to the character. And I just think you can't go wrong when you do that with especially a female character.
And also, I think with the whole dad thing, that also helps to relate her and Angel like more, because I mean, from the brief flashbacks that we've gotten from Angel's relationship with his father, it was very strained as well, you know, from like becoming part one, I believe. And I think that that's another thing that is like kind of linked. That's like something that kind of they have in common that they don't really know that they have in common, but it's kind of like an unspoken thing. And I think it shows in like, you know, the final scene. Is it the final scene in this episode? But anyway, when Angel's listening in on the conversation and he looks just as gutted as she does when her dad says all of these things to her. So it's like he's kind of seeing like I get it. Like he's identifying with that, you know, having a father that's disappointed in you and that refuses to connect with you, because that's what he experienced when he was a human with his own father.
Well, I love how the script says it too. It says, Kate gently looks around, doesn't want to be seen at this particular moment. Angel in the shadows, he affords her that sensitivity. And now he too turns and walks away. And I like that they said that specifically, that sensitivity. Mm-hmm. And I think showing that like Angel is sensitive. You know what I mean? Like
he is.
He does understand. He's able to empathize. He knows when to walk away and when to approach and say, hey, do you need anything? Do you need help? Whatever. So I don't know. I liked that they used that choice of words for that.
I do think Angel is, like you said, he's a sensitive person and he's very aware of the people around him and what's happening around him. It's just that he doesn't always say it out loud. He internalizes a lot of it. And I think it's interesting because if he were Angelus, he would have used all of these things that he knows about people against them. But like him as Angel, like with a soul, he's very much like, maybe that's why he doesn't, just kind of like a thought, but maybe that's why he doesn't kind of outwardly talk to, like isn't outwardly like sensitive toward people, because it's like he sees all of these things about people, but he doesn't want to kind of use it against them, and he doesn't think that he can. Like, I don't know if I'm making any sense, but maybe it's just because as Angelus, he would use these things to hurt people. And as Angel, like, he still sees all of these things, but he doesn't want to hurt people with them. It's just like, you know, it's none of my business, and I'm just gonna be an observer, which I think is kind of how Angel is. He's very quiet, very reserved person, and doesn't want to draw attention to himself, but he sees everything.
I think for Angel, like he has so much guilt and shame that there's almost this sense of like, why would I want anybody else to feel that way? Mm-hmm. You know? And if I can do anything to alleviate that for someone else, like I know how that feels for me. So I really think that like he's just very capable of being empathetic and getting into other people's shoes because, mm-hmm. and we all know this, like the people who have been through the most pain, it either makes you incredibly bitter or it makes you just like the softest, sweetest, kindest, like most compassionate person around. And I think Angel is like, he isn't bitter at all. Instead, it's actually made him able to connect with people on a much deeper right. level, you know? Right.
And shout out to Buffy for helping him get there. Mm-hmm. Just a little shout out to Miss Buffy Summers.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I'm all for it. Anytime we can bring Buffy in, I'm like, woo, fan girl. We haven't said
Buffy, like, oh, we did talk about her at the beginning of the episode, but like, it's obligatory, like, Buffy mention in every episode.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. 100%. We got to find a way to get her in every single episode. Gotta every single episode. Part of all this. Yes. All right, guys, that was Sense and Sensitivity. What did you guys think of it? Do you guys have a newer appreciation for Kate? Do you think this episode is a candy episode? Is it one that you think is a little confusing with its message? I don't know. Let us know. I'm always curious because I feel like so often I have a very different feel. And even you, Leia, we have very different opinions than like the majority of the reviews that I see. So I'd be curious to hear from some of our listeners and see like, well, you guys think, did this change your perspective on Kate at all? Because it kind of changed it for me. I think that she mm-hmm. came off way better here than she did in Lonely Heart. So I'm excited to see more of her. And I did not think I'd say that, you know. As always, guys, thanks so much for listening. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on all platforms. And we will see you guys next time. Thanks so much for listening to Investigating Angel. If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to follow, subscribe, and review us on all platforms. You can also find us on Instagram at Investigating Angel Podcast, and you can email us at investigatingangelpodcast@gmail.com.